Hello, and welcome to the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative to record America's family history in sound. Oral histories are one of the most personal and rewarding ways to preserve family stories. The Tell Me a Story sessions are 45-minute interviews between two people with the assistance of a trained facilitator. Participants will receive a compact disc with the full interview. A copy will be archived at the Midwest Genealogy Center and, with permission, later made available to the public. And now, another story.
One of the great tragedies of our time, misunderstood, misapplied, mispictured, and definitely miscalculated. That's the war in Vietnam. This kind of was co-equal with the breaking down of segregation in the United States. But more importantly, there's a lot of movies that were made about Vietnam. But there was one particular movie. It was called Saving Private Ryan. And this starred Tom Hanks. And if you remember the movie, it was about Vietnam and all the burning and all the shooting and all the jungles. And it was a different kind of war for America to fight. But in the movie, if you remember, they were supposed to go and find Private Ryan, who was on the front line in the infantry, because his parents, his mother, and his sister needed him back home. And the two guys that were delegated or at least assigned to go find and save Private Ryan, they had to go through an awful lot to get to him because he was right on the front line. So they had to go through fires, they had to dodge bullets, they had to duck, they had to steal jeeps, etc., all to get and save Private Ryan. But what's most moving about the movie is when they got to Private Ryan, he wasn't exactly that excited about going with them. And I remember so vividly the response of the two men who had gone through literally hell to get to him. He said, "Man, you better come and go. And you better be somebody, because we have gone through literally hell to get to you." Now, with that as a backdrop, it looks like, Ron Winfrey, that you have benefited from the toils and the struggles of others. Would that be true?
Yes, I would say so. Okay. Yes.
And we're going to dig way into why after we get kind of a foundation here.
Okay.
All right. Tell us who Ron Winfrey really is. Where you born? What you do? What were you like as a teenager?
Born in Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay.
General Hospital, number 2.
All right.
And at that time, I didn't realize that that was the only hospital blacks could be born at in Kansas City. Yeah. But I grew up pretty normal life, played baseball, had a good home life. My mom and dad were together, and dad worked, mom worked. I was a middle child.
Okay. Out of how many brothers and sisters?
One sister who was deceased, and a brother, younger brother.
So right now you're the oldest?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
All right. So you said you're born in General Hospital number 2, okay, mm-hmm. And you made the distinction there that this was a black hospital. What do you remember about General Hospital number 2?
I remember nothing about General Hospital.
Okay. What did you know about General Hospital number 2?
Well,
and why number 2?
Because number 1 was for the whites. Mm-hmm. General Hospital number 1.
All right.
And so I always, when people would ask me where I was born when I was young, that's what I'd always say. General Hospital number 2.
Number 2.
That's where I was born.
Okay.
And I guess also because I was the only one in my family that was born in Missouri.
Okay.
All of my family was born in Kansas.
Okay, fine. And you talked about your mother and your father both working. Why did you make that distinction?
Because today you don't see a lot of that.
Okay.
you know, where you have two parents and you know, a stable home life. You don't see a lot of that anymore.
Did you feel blessed?
Oh, absolutely.
Did you feel blessed then as you feel now that you know, or, I mean... You did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you said they both work, where did they work?
My dad was a truck driver for Meyer & Newer packing house.
Okay.
And my mother did day work. Okay. She did for years.
Tell me about the day work. What does that mean?
She was a housekeeper.
Okay. For?
Number of different white families.
Okay.
You know, and but they all respected my mother.
Okay. And we'll get to that in a minute. But there's a movie that just grossed over $150 million that was just released maybe 2 months ago, mm-hmm. and it was called Help.
Mm-hmm.
And and it was just about the kind of people that your mother was. Did you see that movie?
Mm-mm.
Did you hear about it at all? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was about day workers,
uh-huh.
the people who worked in the
right.
in the white homes and raised the. Mm-hmm. But the idea here was, or the slapping part was, that they, while they could raise the kids and cook their food, they could not use the bathrooms in the house,
mm.
which meant that this was the, you know, the line
right,
that you can't
right.
cross. And then when you talked about General Hospital number 2, and then you talked about your mother doing day work. But anyway, tell us about this day work. What's that? What you said it's not so bad, or what did you mean?
Well, my mother, she seemed to enjoy it, and she was always a great housekeeper, you know, as far as our house, you know, we had to dust, sweep, and everything, every day.
Did you learn to iron?
Yeah.
Did you? And why did you learn to iron?
I had to. I was home alone a lot of times, you know, and it was just my sister and I. And my mom, you know, she's up early going to work. My dad was up early going to work, so.
So they taught you to be self-reliant?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
I mean, how did they drill that into you?
Just by example.
By example.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you like them both?
Oh, absolutely.
Did it make you go to church?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What church did you go to?
War Chapel.
War Chapel. It's now at
22nd and Prospect.
Yeah. Is it still there?
It's still there.
It's still there.
Yeah.
Now, I know they were on a building. They're on a building or something. Are they building a new church or want to build a new
they
church?
They might be. I'm not sure.
Okay, very good. So you had to go to church on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what else was the rest of your week like?
School.
School? And where did you went to school?
Kindergarten, I went to WW8. Then after the kindergarten, we moved way south. Well, I grew up on 13th and Troops.
Okay.
And at that time, my mother was a manager of an apartment building.
Okay.
And then we moved way south to 30th and Agnes.
That's way south?
Back then it was.
Way south now is 175th.
Yeah. But back then, I mean, we were way south on 30th. That was in like 52 or 53.
All right. So what were you like as a teenager?
I'm
talking 15, 16. Did you drive?
Yeah. I started driving at 15, and I played baseball, started bowling. Well, I had started bowling it when I was 14, but baseball was my first love.
Okay.
And in general, just a lot of sports. It was a lot of sports in my life. I played a lot of sports.
Were you naturally good, or you were good because you worked hard at it?
I think I had a lot more natural ability, and some things I didn't work as hard at as I should have.
Okay, and we're going to dig into that very statement a little bit later, okay? All right, let's baseball. What were you? Shortstop?
I played all the positions.
Played all the positions?
Yeah.
And where did you play them? Parks and Recreation or where?
T.B. Watkins.
T.B. Watkins.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're in the 13th and Truce growing up? Is that
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where I grew up. Well, I was only there till about 6 years old.
Okay.
And by the time I was seven, we had moved
further south. Uh-huh. So you traveled further south down to T.B. Watkins.
Right.
Okay, to
Parade Park.
Mm-hmm. Was there organized sports then? Is that what was happening?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So who knew, who told you you were good at baseball?
A lot of different people that saw me play. Okay. My nickname back then, they used to call me Satch because I was also a pitcher. I pitched. Oh. And a lot of people said that I reminded them of Satchel Paige when I pitched.
So you had a little history going for
you.
How'd that make you feel, Ron?
Proud.
Proud.
You know, yeah.
Did you have a little swagger with you?
Probably.
I was sorry. Yeah. All right. You said you started bowling at 14, but I kind of want to deal with that a little bit later. Okay, now you're... Are you a military guy? Did you go into the military?
No.
How'd you escape the military?
Well, I knew I was coming up for the draft.
Okay.
And so a lot of my friends had gone into the National Guard, so I said, well, maybe that's what I'll try. So I went into and took the first part of the test. Then I had to take the physical. At the time, I had a bad knee.
Okay.
And so Sergeant Tyler at down at the National Guard unit told me that I should tell the doctors about my knee when I went to take the physical. So I did, and so it was my right knee that was I had a lot of trouble with, but they rejected me because they said my left knee was bad.
How about that? So, you didn't argue? You didn't argue?
I didn't argue. Yeah.
All right, well, okay, we're going to relate this whole thing here to this Vietnam War. So you grew up in the Vietnam era, right?
Yeah.
So many of your friends went to the war.
Yeah.
What did you think about the Vietnam War? I mean, what did you understand about it?
Well, at that time, I didn't understand it at all, you know, why we were there at that time. Like I said, I lost a number of friends over there, and then a lot of them that came back, minds were messed up.
That's right.
One friend in particular, when he came back, I asked him, did you kill anybody over there? And he said, no. Mm-hmm. You know, he said he didn't know. And I asked him, why not? And he said, if you don't shoot, they didn't know you were there.
Ooh, interesting. So it was kind of a self-defense mechanism.
Yeah, And that one day he said, we'll talk about the war this day. But after today, I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Wow.
And that's the way it was.
You said the minds are messed up. Tell me about that.
Well, with the drugs and everything, and just all the death that they were seeing. Mm-hmm. You know.
So you're currently how old now?
65.
Okay, and then 65, you're beginning to get the benefits of segregation now, that things are breaking down, right?
Right.
Your growing up years and whatever. And then, but we still got this plague over here with the Vietnam War, I mean, what the war is. And of course, all of us who grew up in the time, we knew that the war was so hard to misunderstand, I mean, to understand. Like, why are we going there?
Right.
What does it mean? And then you find out later in history that it's, you know, it's all about power and it's all about prestige and, you know, because there was nothing else in Vietnam.
Right.
But you know, one of the great tragedies that we never see about war is the residue, and some of those. In fact, that's the beginning of the drug culture in our in our neighborhoods, is the need for drugs and whatever. But anyway, let's not tarry too long on that. Let's go back to 14. You're a good baseball player. You're down in T.B. Watkins. You're living far south. You're absolutely amazed by the swagger that you get from being a good baseball player, and but tell me about this bowling. You just kind of stumbled into bowling, did you?
I was 8 years old at the time, and I was in Sioux City, Iowa, and so they had a theater there that they turned into a four-lane bowling alley.
Okay.
And I went up there and bowled game. First game I bowled 88.
Uh-huh.
And so I really had a great time, you know. I beat everybody, you know. And so
1488, okay.
And so I came back to Kansas City, and there was no place for me to bowl. I wasn't aware of minor clients.
How'd you get to Sioux City, though? Is it baseball?
No, my relatives.
Your relatives.
I have a lot of
relatives
in Iowa.
Okay.
And so I came back to Kansas City. No place to bowl. Like I said, I didn't know about Monarch.
Okay.
And you couldn't bowl anyplace else.
All right.
So I was just into baseball up until Melody Lanes opened.
Okay. Now tell me what you thought about Melody Lanes when you saw it.
I loved it. I fell in love with it. I started working there, as a matter of fact, at 14.
Okay.
I was working behind the counter.
Okay, behind the counter. You weren't pin setting?
No.
Yeah.
No, they, at that time, they had automatic pin setters.
Okay, so we got a new era coming.
Yeah. I had bowled lanes that had pin boys.
Okay.
In St. Louis and stuff. But and they still had some pin boys in Kansas City. They had some lanes that had still didn't have automatic pin setters.
Right. So you're 14 and you're working out into the community?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you're working behind the counter.
Yeah.
And what did you do behind the counter? I mean, why was...
I accepted, you know, money for bowling fees and just all the things, answer telephone.
All right, so the day
like
we're
that.
Facing all this violence and whatever is going on, I mean, what did your mother and father think about you working at 14, and where were the child labor laws that said you had to be 16 to work? I mean,
Mr. Long was basically paying me under the table, you know. my parents, you know, they were all working, and I wanted to have my own money, so it was just, and it, I wanted to be at the bowling alley.
So this self-reliance.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
This swagger that you got is kind of, and I keep going back to that because it kind of, you know, like it takes a little swagger to make it through the world, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you don't want to be passive, but you kind of, you don't want to be flamboyant.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, you are here and you got a place and whatever. So is that where you started to bowl rather frequently once you got on the job?
Oh, absolutely.
So when did you bowl? I mean, you can't be at the counter and you can't be on the lane.
I practiced every day. And then after I'd been there a while, I used to bowl all night long.
Is that, what do you mean all night long?
I'd close bowling alley up at 12, 1 o'clock. I'd bowl till 7, 8 o'clock
so
in the morning.
So what year are we talking about now?
Well, that would have been in 1966.
Okay.
And 66 and 67.
So you're how old at this point?
20, 21.
You're 20. And you're bowling all night to get better?
Yeah.
To get better. And did you have a goal in mind?
I wanted to bowl on tour.
You want to bowl on tour. And what does on tour mean?
Bowl professionally.
You want to bowl professionally. So when did that notion get to you? I mean, when did you think you were good enough to bowl on tour, as you would say? Or when you even thought that was in your emotional resume?
Yeah, probably around the time I was 22, 23.
22 and 23. So you would work at the bowling alley and then practice all night.
Yep.
How good a bowler were you at this point?
At that time, I was pretty fair. I wasn't the best in town.
What's pretty fair? In terms of score?
I was averaging around 200 at that time.
Oh, just 200. Now, you're a long way from that 88 in Sioux City.
Okay.
Were you bowling it consistently?
Once I averaged 200, in a summer league. It was a summer league. I was the first bowler that averaged 200 in Melody Lanes.
Is that right?
And I averaged 215 that summer. And after that was when I kind of really was ready to go out on tour. Thought I was ready to go.
All right. Now, before we get you on tour, we heard a lot about J.C. Collins, and we heard about lots of people coaching and sharing and whatever, and of course I know that was a little bit before your time, but they did mention J.C. Collins being a Melody Lanes. Did you meet him?
I met J.C. when I was in junior league at Melody. His son bowled in junior league over there.
Okay.
And after our junior league kind of fell off when I was 16, So I had to start bowling with adults
at
16.
All right.
And so one of my goals was to beat J.C. Collins. I mean, he was the best around. At the time, he was the best.
What made him best?
The guy just was determined not to let anybody beat him.
He just had that.
Oh, yeah. And, well, he had this thing about him. See, he had arthritis real bad.
Even then?
Yeah. And, I mean, he had pain. He wasn't even supposed to be walking, leave alone bowling.
Hmm.
And the guy was just, I mean, he was just fantastic. And if he liked you, you knew it. And if he didn't like you, you knew it. He knew it. That's the way J.C. was.
And he liked you.
Yeah. Okay. But for years, I tried to beat him. And my dad couldn't stand J.C.
Because
he was beating me.
Okay.
And so, because we were gambling, you know. Okay. And
when you say gambling, let's put that in perspective.
Well, back then, J.C. and I always bowled 2-game total for $5. So that's a lot of money.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I didn't want him to think that you were a casino.
No.
Hustling, man.
Yeah, and so I used to go over to Rhythm Lanes because at that time he was bowling in Rhythm Lanes, and I'd go over there looking for him so we could bowl.
And how much older is he than you?
J.C. is probably 20.
I mean, but then.
About back then.
Yeah, you were like in your 20s.
I was 16.
You were 16, and he was like in his 30s maybe?
Probably
early 30s. Yeah, okay, so there was an age gap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So why do you want to beat him? I mean, what?
Just the challenge. And he was the best. So it took me until I was 19, and I got him.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
And after that, he and I started bowling doubles together.
Is that right? Describe that day when you beat him.
At that time, that was the happiest day.
Up till then.
Yeah, yeah.
What made him fascinated to watch?
Just his determination. I mean, the guy, he just...
Did he do everything right on the bowling? I mean, was he approached good? Was his layout?
He was just his accuracy and consistency.
Okay.
And like I said, his determination not to lose.
Okay, where did he put his ball down, and where did he expect it to go?
Well, back in those days, he threw what they called a full roller,
okay.
and he went straight up the boards,
okay. and just a little bit off the middle there.
Uh huh. Okay. The guy just threw every ball looked the same.
Okay, where were you bowling at that point? Where was your mark?
I was more inside at that time, and I threw a little more hook than he did,
okay.
I guess as I matured, I started going straighter and straighter, mm-hmm. trying to be more like
him.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. the straight ball obviously would deliver consistency over time.
Right, right.
Yeah. All right, now we're getting through all this, and you're beginning to beat up on the old man and stuff. But your buddy and you're actually thinking about going pro. So when did that day culminate? I mean, which day did you decide that you were good enough to go on tour?
They had a regional, PBA regional tournament here.
And we're talking what year?
This would have been in 71.
Okay.
And Mr. Long had a friend that was willing to sponsor me on tour, and the deal was I had to bowl. If I bowled this regional tournament, if I cashed, they put me out on tour.
If they cashed, what does that mean?
If I made some money,
okay.
in the tournament. So up until the last game, I was out of the money. Then the last game, I shoot 256, 257. And snuck in and got a little big paycheck.
So you cashed.
Yeah, I cashed. And then they put me out on tour.
Okay. All right, at this time you're 20?
I was 26.
Okay, now going back to this Private Ryan thing, you know, when they went up to Discovery, and they basically, well, he had to be something. Did you ever feel like you had to be something after sort of benefiting from all those that went for you? Did you have that drive inside of you that you had to be better, or that you had to be good, or you had to go on tour? I mean, what's the motivator here?
Well, it was one of two things. Like I said, I was involved in sports most of my life.
Competitive.
And I had passed up an opportunity to play baseball. The St. Louis Cardinals had scouted me.
Oh, you didn't say
and,
that.
And I was offered a scholarship to go to Lincoln U and play baseball.
All right.
So they wanted me to go as a pitcher. I didn't want to be a pitcher. And not having anyone really to talk to, I turned down the scholarship offer.
Okay.
And got more into my bowling. And then after that, that's what really drove me on the bowling side.
Okay. Let me get back to that. Having no one to talk to. What does that mean?
Well,
you got both parents at home.
Were both like, they finished grade school. I think my mom graduated. My dad didn't.
All right, so they were good people, but they weren't equipped to move you on up the
And road. I had gotten a little wild during that time.
Tell me what you mean by a little wild. Come on.
Well,
you're either wild or you ain't. What is it?
Well, I was just, by the time I was 19, 20, I had moved into my own apartment.
Okay.
And was working. And
at Melody.
Yeah, at Melody. And I worked at the post office for a year.
Oh, okay.
And I always had one or two jobs, you know, always. And I was more or less just out there on my own. And I didn't have a lot of direction then, I guess, you know. And
do you regret not going to Lincoln?
Yeah, because I it came to me later that I didn't have to remain a pitcher if I went.
Oh, you had some latitude there.
And so I've always regretted not doing that.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you regret, is you to this day?
Yeah.
Do you? And what do you think that would have gotten you?
I really believe I was a better baseball player than I was a bowler.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
And even though you didn't want to pitch, and even though you had two knees that were equally inefficient, but you just feel like that might have been your takeoff point.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep, I think that was a turning point for me.
All right, but that's not a bad deal from what you're describing as a bowler. I mean, if you're hitting 256 and you're beating J.C. Collins and you know, you're about to turn pro. And as you say, cashing out, that don't sound like a bad deal to me.
Well, it was and it wasn't.
What was it?
Well, I got married when I was 21.
Okay.
And being out there traveling, it's not like it is now. Back then, we were gone. I was gone like 36 weeks out of a year.
When you were on tour? Is that right?
So it wasn't good for my marriage.
Right. Where did you go? And I'm going to get to that marriage bit in a minute. But where did you go when you're on tour? You're out there with the big boys.
Every major city in the country, and a lot of little small towns, Mitchell, South Dakota, all up and down the West Coast, all up and down the East Coast.
Did you cash?
When I was on tour, I cashed one time.
Is there? And how much was that?
$500.
$500.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happened to the other time?
Just, you know, a lot of close calls on the national tour.
What's close call?
Close caches, you know, just missing. I had a bad case of nerves out there for whatever reason. And
nervousness?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And got to a point where I didn't even want to go because of I had a fright from flying.
Ooh.
I had so many close calls on planes that I was just scared to death every time I got on a plane.
So how'd you take care of that? Did you take aspirin? You
drank all the alcohol I could before I got on.
Was that a downer?
Yeah.
Okay. Did that lead to, in any way, messing up your bowling accuracy?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So, so you're going to say, or in a word or two, then you definitely regretted not going to Lincoln, right?
Oh,
at this point?
Yeah.
Did that come up every time you would not cash?
No.
In your mind?
No.
But the alcohol did?
What came up in my mind was, I got to get on that plane again.
Okay.
And that's, and we, you know, we'd be in two different cities every week.
So it wore you down?
Oh, yeah. Finally, I just quit.
Okay. You said you drank a lot. Did you drink before you went on the plane or drank afterwards? I mean, what?
Before, during, and after.
Was it a lot?
Oh, yeah.
Was it a problem?
Yeah.
And you said your marriage broke up.
I was gone too much.
You had gone too much?
Yeah.
But not because of the alcohol?
No.
Okay. Very good. Do you drink today?
Yeah.
Do you? It's not a problem?
No.
Did you ever consider it a problem?
At one time.
At one time?
Yeah.
Do you in any way blame alcohol for what you could have been?
No.
No. Okay, good. So it's not that. But we're out here on the tour. Who are you bowling against?
Oh, during that time it was everybody just about is in the Hall of Fame now. Dick Weber, Earl Anthony, Johnny Petraglia,
wow.
Ray Bluth, Billy Whalen. I can go on and on and on. Jim Godman. Practically everybody during that time is in the Hall of Fame. And back during that time, matter of fact, to get out on tour, which they like now they have a tour in school or qualifying that you have to go through, right? Back then, you needed to get three professional bowlers to sign an application for you to recommend you.
Okay.
To get out there, so
who signed you?
I had Ray Bluth, Dick Weber, and who was it? Tom Hennessy.
Okay. Did these guys coach you any?
No,
or you didn't really need coaching.
Not during that time, and that was one of the things I guess that affected me too, because I got out there, and first tournament I was crossing with Dick Weber. And I look at him.
What does crossing mean?
Well, we were on the same pair of lanes.
Okay.
And I looked at him, I'm going, why am I out here? I can't beat this guy. I said in my mind I couldn't beat him.
Okay.
And so I was defeated before I started.
Okay.
You know, and I think I gave a lot of those guys too much respect.
Gave away too much respect.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, now the significance of this and the part that certainly attracts me to ask you this question is the fact that, are you the only black person out here on tour?
At that time, I was the only full-time black bowler out there.
What does that mean?
I was out there the whole tour.
The whole tour.
Winter and summer.
Give or take, this is it.
And all the other blacks that were out there didn't have the sponsorship like I had.
Okay.
And so they couldn't be out full time. They were part timers. Okay. But there were other blacks from New York and Detroit.
But you were the only full timer.
Yeah.
Did your color in any way color their situation?
I don't know if it colored their situation, but I'll put it this way. When I was out there, I created a lot of first.
Okay.
Because we'd go out to every city we went into, you know, they the different golf courses and stuff, they'd give us cars, want us to come out there and play golf. And because I did that also, played a little golf.
Yeah, we didn't add that in.
But there were a lot of country clubs that I was the first and only black that was allowed to go to.
Okay, so you were Private Ryan there.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. But they, because... we had a place out in California one time, and they wasn't going to let me play because I was black.
I see.
And, the tour said, well, none of us will play, you know, and they were going to drop their sponsorship and everything.
Okay.
But so they gave in, you know.
Do you feel special for having lived?
Yeah.
Do you feel blessed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And why?
Well, just for one, being here still, walking this earth.
As relates to the bowling stuff.
To the, it's made me meet a lot of people. I've made a lot of friends. And at this time and point in my life, if it hadn't been for bowling, I don't know what I'd be doing.
Very interesting.
You know.
So when you see young bowlers on the lanes now, I mean, what do you do, Ron?
I talk to some of them, and the ones that are receptive, you know, because all bowlers aren't, you know, and so I try to help them as much as I can.
Okay. Do they know who you are?
Some do, and then some of them don't know my name. They gave me a new nickname.
What is that?
They call me the Godfather. a lot of them, that's when I walk in the bowling alley, they won't say, hey Ron, Godfather. You know, they call me the Godfather of bowl.
Do you remember how we met? Do you remember any of that?
Yeah,
I guess, do
when,
you?
When I was manager at King Louis East, and you used to come out there and bowl and play a lot.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it was, and I have to say, you know, when you were saying about your getting away, you know, and being away from home, you know, in my household at the time, I could listen to all of that was words up until about 8 p.m. I could handle it. I could, whatever it was, if it was a bad day, if it was venting or whatever she said, I could take it up until about 8.
Right.
But 8 o'clock, it was kind of like, it was hard for me. And so I had to develop some exit strategy to move out. And so a friend of mine said, why don't you go bowling? Because, you know, the leagues would be over like about 8:30 or whatever. And then that's why I started bowling. Now, I had no interest in or no support of bowling. I was really just trying to, my ears were about to wear out, and I just had to go someplace. Mm-hmm. And that's where I first went. And do you remember Deborah Thompson?
Deborah Thompson.
A little bitty.
That name sure sounds
familiar. She was the one that introduced me to bowling.
Okay.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
And I would go out and watch her. And she was such a little girl, but she could really bowl.
Yeah.
And I remember when she was the top female bowler, she had 185 average.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so small that she could barely pick up the pins. And her ball was so light that she had to put the ball in the pocket like every time to even get there. She got no pin action. And whatever. But going back to that time, you were the assistant manager, you were the manager at?
Both. I started out as assistant manager.
You started out as assistant manager.
And then our manager died.
Okay.
And then they promoted me up to manager.
Did you like that?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I don't know if I would enjoy it so much now, but back then, I mean, I loved it.
Yeah, it was all a part of your swagger.
Yeah, meeting people, you know.
I got it. All right. Anything else that you want to sign off on? We've taken a long journey here, and I'm certainly proud to know you, and I'm certainly proud that you're part of this revival, if you must, of bowlers, and looking back and resurrecting the history. And it's fascinating every time I hear one of you guys talk. And I'm sure glad you're going to be part of this October 29th festival. And you're going to bowl one of the top 15 bowlers, is that right?
Yeah.
You're going to bowl in that.
Yeah.
Did you know that, Joyson? He's going to be one of the bowlers. And what we wanted to do that was to get the best bowlers in town to go head to head against each other. So you're in there, right?
That's what I hear.
All right. Did you ever bowl a perfect game?
Yeah, I think I've got 11 or 14 or something.
What's it like to bowl a perfect game?
I mean, it's exciting.
It's exciting? You
know? Yeah. I'd like to get another one soon.
Okay.
You know? If I don't change where I'm bowling at, though, it probably won't happen.
Okay. I won't ask where you're bowling. All righty. So you've got lots of rings.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that a special achievement?
Oh,
it is.
Yeah. You know, I bowled my first one in Chicago in a regional professional tournament.
Okay.
And actually, a lot of my 300s I shot out of town. It's versus here in Kansas City.
Yeah. All right. Do you still think you could beat J.C. Collins?
Oh, yeah, they can't walk, man.
All right. Final word. What would you say from here on about your life and in general and going forward where you are? And
well,
just give us a good sign-off as you can picture those two guys reaching Private Ryan right in the middle of all the gunfire and all the things that are going on. And they're beginning to sort of get to his attention, and they sort of leave there and go back home or whatever. Tell me about your life. Tell me what you think about all this.
Well, at this time in my life, I'm self-employed, helping raise a great grandbaby, and I'm really kind of enjoying life. I'm still working, married. Happily married, and my health is good, man. I'm appreciative of that I still function and still work with people. I've always enjoyed being around people.
Still letting the ball go smoothly like you've always.
Sometimes.
All right, we've been talking to Ron Renfrew, and give Ron a great hand for being such a good person to talk to. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right, that's it.